What's going on, everyone? Jason Brown here, co-host and producer of the Climbing the Pocket podcast, back with a special edition of the show. On this episode, friend of the pod and most hated, maybe, journalist on Vikings Twitter at the moment, Matthew Collar joins me for a special sit-down interview via the magic of the internet and all that good stuff. In this interview, we cover a wide range of topics, including Teddy Bridgewater, Kirk Cousins, Matt's background as a sports journalist, his new roles, things he's reading to keep himself up to date with football, and a host of other things. It was a lot of fun to record with Matt. Thankful for him coming on. If you like the episode, let me know what you think. If you don't like the episode, let me know what you think. Yeah, that's enough talking for me. Here comes the show. Well, all right, we're live. And ladies and gentlemen, very, very, very happy to be joined this evening by friend of the show and currently, I don't know, maybe public enemy number one on Vikings Twitter, Matthew Collar. Thank you for coming on the Climbing the Pocket podcast.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I'm a fan of the podcast and I would hope that I'm actually not public enemy number one. I hope you're just messing with me because I desperately need the engagement on Twitter to, you know, make friends online and things like that. I don't want to be controversial and upset anyone.
Well, then we might need to go about, we might need to figure out a different way to go about what you're doing because, you know, late night Twitter rants about how good Teddy Bridgewater might have been. I mean, you know, that's pouring salt, Matthew. What was that all about? Why are you the way you are? Why are you doing these things to us and well, reopening old wounds?
Well, I'll tell you, sometimes I just end up down a rabbit hole like anybody else where you start looking into one thing and then you look into the next thing and then you end up finding a bunch of tape or a bunch of stats because what else do I have to do? I do not have a robust social life, if you haven't noticed. I'm mostly just like everybody else on Vikings Twitter looking at football even in the middle of February. And, you know, I realized the other night that I have never gone back and looked at Teddy Bridgewater's 2015 Pro Football Focus stats, that I've watched back that 2015 season a couple of times, especially as a refresher when I thought it was possible that the Vikings would bench Case Keenum and put in Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, after the game in Carolina last year, I thought, well, you know, I don't know. Is Mike Zimmer looking for an excuse to get Teddy back in there? So, you know, I went back and watched a bunch of those games and things like that, but I never went through the PFF quarterback stats. So I decided to poke through them and boy, they are really illuminating for telling the Teddy Bridgewater story that sometimes I get amazed that people who watched all of those games as big time Vikings fans just didn't see it or didn't want to see it with Teddy Bridgewater. The number of throws that were dropped, the number of times he was forced to throw the ball away because Matt Khalil and TJ Clemmings were the tackles, the big time throws on third down, you know, stuff like that. The adjusted completion percentage was just through the roof when you take away those throwaways and the drops and things like that. And then even when you look at how he performed throwing to individual wide receivers and who his wide receivers were, that of course, Mike Wallace didn't work out very well, but you know, throwing to Rudolph, throwing to Diggs, throwing to Jarius Wright, he just had impressive, impressive numbers. And people focus so much on that touchdown stat that I think if you're still talking about the touchdown stat, you've probably just stuck your head in the sand and said, he wasn't good. He wasn't good. I studied his throwing motion at Louisville and I know he wasn't good. And that stuff just, that drives me crazy. So every once in a while, I kind of have to go back and take a look. And it really does feel like such a travesty for Minnesota fans that Teddy Bridgewater ended his time in Minnesota the way he did, just without even getting that second chance to show people he could bounce back.
Yeah, yeah. But you mentioned something there that I feel like maybe is at the root of many of the issues that it seems like you have with the general fan base there, that you're unflinching, you're pushing back against kind of volume stats and the narrative that volume stats have built around many quarterbacks kind of going into the season. You know, Kirk Cousins, 4,000 yards coming out of this season, you know, Kirk Cousins and the 4,000 yards and, you know, those different things. Teddy Bridgewater only having 14 touchdowns. What is it about, I guess, the stats that we all grew up on and were told are the things that tell us the story about football? What is it about those stats that seem to bother you so much, especially when it comes to the quarterbacks?
Because they lie to us constantly. That's why. Because they do not tell us the truth or any sort of context about what actually happened and what leads to winning. I think, you know, there's always this debate that comes down to QB wins, and you see people make fun of it all the time, of like, haha, this bad quarterback won some games that one year. Haha, QB wins. Or, you know, a quarterback had a bunch of great stats and didn't win. Like, but the thing that we're all trying to figure out is what equates to winning. And that's how we evaluate, right? When you go to the NFL combine and you look at these players, you're looking for who will help you win the most football games. And that's why you draft them. And yet we seem to not always look at quarterbacks this way, and maybe wide receivers too, to some extent. We look at the number of catches they had, the number of touchdowns, the number of yards. But usually if you're catching 90 balls with a bunch of touchdowns and yards, you did pretty well. I think that one shows you quite a bit. But with quarterbacks, you know, Cousins and Bridgewater are the ultimate examples of how these things can lie to you. Because if you watched every single game, it's almost impossible to walk away from Kirk Cousins' season and say, yeah, that was great. Like, I mean, just look at the big games that they had, especially the last one in week 17. You need a big performance and it wasn't there. Look at the third downs. Look at how many times that he patted the ball and stood in the pocket and nothing happened. And, you know, he still ends up with 4,000 yards, but go to Chicago at Soldier Field and they're down, what, 22-6 or something. And then he starts throwing up and down the field. We saw that so many times. And with Bridgewater, they were often in close games. They were often winning games that year that he would get them ahead by sustaining drives. They scored on a high percentage of their drives. They were seventh in the league in their scoring percentage, so he was making sure he was producing points. He didn't turn the ball over very often, which we know equates to winning when quarterbacks do not turn the ball over. And Cousins was the opposite and gave the opposition, I think, 35 free points on fumbles for touchdown or pick sixes. And so it takes really only a couple of seconds to realize why 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns just don't mean a whole lot toward winning for how good your quarterback played. And I think that that's why it drives me so crazy, is because, you know, when you do a more honest evaluation of Kirk Cousins, you see just how much certain things impacted him, not having the number three wide receiver, what the pressure did to him, what the offense was designed to do, which was basically try to make up for how poor the offensive line was by having quick throws. And then also some of his shortcomings of not taking risks, not doing the thing that Case Keenum was so good at, which is just throw it up to Diggs and Thielen. He seemed to be kind of averse to that. And that's what the numbers underneath the surface will tell you. He was one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL on third and long. And Teddy Bridgewater was one of the best. And third and long, that's where drives get sustained. That's how you produce points. And just because one quarterback had a running back in Adrian Peterson that got the ball every time they were in the red zone, and Kirk Cousins got to throw it every time they were in the red zone, does not mean that one ran a more effective offense than the other. So, you know, I mean, it's not Teddy versus Kirk exactly. It's really like one season that a quarterback played was decidedly better than the other one, but didn't win you a fantasy championship.
Ooh, coming for fantasy Twitter and Kirk Cousins Twitter all at the same time. You're a brave man, Matthew Collar. You're a brave man. I guess a question I have for you, because I guess so much of what the fan base wants you to do is really, you know, prop up Kirk Cousins, say nice things about him. It seems, or it feels like, a lot of what you have to say about Kirk Cousins is negative. I guess if I had to ask you where you see Kirk Cousins as a quarterback amongst all the other quarterbacks in the NFL, like, where does he fall for you? Where does he rank? Because sometimes people might feel like, just based on the tone of some of the conversations, that you think he's absolutely terrible.
Well, let me say this about the positive, negative, and hater or fanboy or whatever, is I think what's hard for people to get their mind around is that I am none of those things, that I don't care. Like, I don't have a dog in the fight. I just do the job that I'm supposed to do as a Vikings reporter and analyst. Like, I didn't grow up here. I have no purple in my closet. Like, I only look at these things through a black and white type of lens, like a lawyer would with a case. And when you look at Kirk Cousins and the bigger picture with him, you get this portrait of what Kirk Cousins is. It's hard to rank where somebody would be in the NFL. I mean, I guess middle of the pack, but with Kirk, he can be much better than he was, but his floor is probably close to what we saw this year, which is why for Vikings fans, it was so disappointing. But what I try to do with any quarterback, whether it's Teddy or whether it's Kirk Cousins or Jameis Winston or whoever else, you know, Andrew Luck, whatever it might be, I would look at all the facts that we have and put them together to try and form a full opinion. And with Kirk Cousins, what I saw was that he desperately needs more help, which is really hard to do when he gets paid as much as he's paid. And there are some serious shortcomings that I think have led him to be around a 500 quarterback that I think are going to be really tough to make up for. I mean, I don't think this is really even a hot take. I mean, sometimes it feels like people act like I'm just taking a flamethrower to Kirk Cousins. There are plenty of positives with Kirk Cousins in his game that you see. He's incredibly accurate most of the time, and he has a good arm, and he can execute an offense, and he is one of the most well-prepared and smart quarterbacks about the game of football that you're ever going to run into. But then there are those other things too. And why I like to use Teddy Bridgewater as an example is because of how different they are in contrast, where Bridgewater didn't have the big fantasy stats. He was great at extending plays and making a big play on third down and leading to winning. And then he also had a locker room presence that Kirk Cousins simply does not have. And we saw that throughout the season, the way that he handled some of the ups and downs. I don't think that anyone in the locker room was very pleased with. So, you know, I mean, these are all things of just looking at what the facts are and trying to present them in the best way that I can. So there are lots of good things that Cousins does that earned him an $84 million contract. And there are lots of things that are drawbacks that have led him to be a 500 quarterback. So as I'm trying to categorize it, it's probably easier to put it in some sort of tier of like, the quarterbacks who are virtually untouchable and could win with almost anything, then guys who, if they have a good team, they've got a chance to win the Super Bowl. And I think he's behind those guys. I think if he has a really good supporting cast, he's still one step behind. And I think we saw that in Washington in 2015 and 2016. So that's kind of how I would put it, is just looking at everything there is to look at. It's all sorts of Pro Football Focus stats, which they keep adding to. It's watching the tape back every game. It's being in the locker room every day and talking to people and talking to Kirk himself about what he saw and what he thinks and how he's leading the team. And then you put it all together, and you know what? It's not surprising that they went 8-7-1, because there were a lot of shortcomings this year. That doesn't mean that it always has to be that way over these next two seasons of his contract, but I don't know how anyone could objectively look at this last season and not say, this was well short of what we expected.
That's fair. And you mentioned a couple of things there, and you said background, and you talked about watching the tape. And one of the things that I've seen kind of levied against you as criticism is, you know, how do we know that you know what you're talking about when you're watching tape or any of those things? I guess, what is your background and kind of how did you come into, you know, yeah, grinding the tape and making the evaluations that you make? Because you do a great job. And I know with the stats, I don't think anyone's really ever come at you from that angle. But I have seen people kind of question you when it comes to like your tape evaluations. Like, what's your background there? And kind of how did you get into grinding the tape and making those sorts of evaluations?
Well, I would say with the stats, I mean, I have a background that goes quite a ways back with analytics, especially in hockey, and then I've applied a lot of them into football. So I feel very comfortable using analytics and putting together, you know, bigger reports, using them to try and present which ones are important, which ones will tell you something, because there are a lot of numbers, and the traditional stats fall into that too, that do tell you lies or don't really lead you to the conclusions that make sense with the tape. And that's what we're trying to always marry, right? Is what you see at the game on Sunday with the bigger picture and how that compares across the league to tell you how good your quarterback was, really. And as far as the tape grinding, I have always approached this journalistically. I do a lot of research on football, like I know you guys do as well. I've got Bruce Arians' book in front of me, The Quarterback Whisperer. I have, you know, other books that I have bought and read as just a researcher and for fun about things like that. And I follow a lot of the same people you follow and interview those types of people. Ted Wynn from The Athletic, we all like his work. But my biggest resource is the people. I do the podcast with Sage Rosenfeld. So a lot of times we watch some of the tape together and I ask questions to him. What do you see there? What happened on this play? And then going to the players, after games in the locker room and getting their takes on these things of what to look at. And not all these conversations are on the record. And I've learned a lot from certain people. I mean, Terrence Newman was one of them, where I could always go to Terrence Newman and ask him what happened on this play or what happened on that play. And that's a tremendous resource that I'm really glad to be able to have. And that always helps me. I don't think by any means that I know everything about what's going on out on tape. I think even the scouts who watch it, the people in the front offices who don't know the plays, like the Pro Football Focus criticism they always get. But Bill Belichick talked about this one time of trying to make conclusions by watching tape, where there are sometimes only so much you can figure out. So a lot of times it brings questions for me that I can go get answered. So I'll watch the tape back after a game and I'll say, okay, now I know what happened on this play. You can see what happened on that play, but you know, what happened on this one? And then I can go ask somebody to explain it to me if it's something that I need to know. So, you know, I do see a lot on Twitter of making big conclusions, taking one clip or a couple clips and putting them together and saying, hey, look, Josh Allen is the most accurate deep passer in history. Here's three passes that he made down the field. And, you know, you see that across any sport with people who are trying to make certain arguments. And, you know, that's, I like to cross-check almost anything that I'm putting out there as far as tape goes, to make sure that I'm giving people the most accurate depiction that I can. And if I don't know the answer to something, I'm not going to try and just fudge it or guess. It's going to be something that I go and ask somebody who would know more than me.
I'm going to need you to be careful on coming after the people who put a couple clips together to come to conclusions. It's draft season right now. That is Twitter right now. So, you know, you already have enough problems with Vikings Twitter. I don't want you to have draft Twitter in your mentions for all of eternity. Another question I did have for you, because another thing that I saw and I've seen, I think there was actually a poll about it that I thought was kind of funny. You know, people, I think, what was the poll question? Vote if you think you could do, this job, or Matthew Collar's job better than him, or you could become a better beat reporter than Matt Collar. Something to that effect, where someone, I guess, whose feelings you'd hurt on the internet, basically, wanted to see if they could have other people rally to their side of saying that they could do your job better than you can, which is funny to me, because I think that you are, you know, one of the best analysts that we've had in quite some time. And I love, I'd say, the vast majority of the stuff that you put out. So maybe I'm biased. Maybe I'm biased in that regard. But can you tell me a little bit, because I think that's something that comes up a lot. Sports fans tend to think that we can all do your job. And that's something that we've actually never talked about when you've been on the pod previously or on our interactions on Twitter. Could you give me a little bit about just the background and the work that goes into getting to a position where you are now, where you do get to write about sports and be on the radio talking about sports and all those things? Because everyone really thinks that it is super easy and that tomorrow I can, basically start my blog, you know, climbingthepocket.com, and my podcast. And then in a couple of weeks, I will be on Score North taking Matthew Collar's job.
Well, I want to say that Climbing the Pocket does a great job. So that's one thing that I've always been a fan of you guys, and I wouldn't say you guys couldn't do it. I would say a lot of people could do it. Absolutely. A lot of people could cover football. And I don't know who did your poll, but then I would say then take my job then. If you think you can do it, then come do it. For me, it took a lot of work to be where I'm at. I started out, I had to buy time on a local sports station on Saturdays by going and selling my own ads to get a 1-hour show that I did in Rochester, New York for 6 months until I was hired to work for $7 an hour as a board op in Buffalo. And then I had to work for 3 years at minimum wage while I lived in low income housing for a couple years doing that until I finally got a full-time job as a producer, which paid me $18,000. And then I got a raise once to $20,000. So that was nice. And so I had to do that for a few more years while driving an hour every other night to go cover the American Hockey League for my station before I could get bumped up to do Buffalo Bills pre and post game show, which didn't pay any more money, actually. And then, you know, I moved here and got the job here after doing that for a long time and had to, you know, pretty much just prove that I could do reporting and be on the air and all those things to the people that are here in this market. So, hey, I mean, if anybody wants to do those sorts of things, that's what it takes for almost anybody in this industry, that you have to start out earning almost no money for a very, very long time. And no matter how much talent you think you have, you have to climb the ladder. And that is not an easy thing to do. But along the way, it's really worth it. And, because I covered minor league baseball, I did play-by-play for it. I did American Hockey League coverage, which I learned a lot about pro sports just by covering the minor leagues. And then, when you do get your opportunity to cover the Minnesota Vikings, you really appreciate it. And, I like to have fun with people on Twitter. I like to go back and forth. I like to come up with fun arguments and fun debates and then have fun debating those things with people. And you know what? Everywhere I've ever been, people get their feelings hurt because they don't have an argument, or because they don't like to go back and forth with people and they think you're being too aggressive. But I mean, I have a good time with it. And I think it's really valuable because I get a lot of ideas of things to write about just from having conversations with Vikings fans. So, in a way, I feel a little bad that people get so upset about it sometimes online, but in another way, it does make me laugh a little bit with, could you do a better job? Like, maybe, but you got to actually get there first. So good luck with that.
Yeah. So after telling that whole story of what, what seemed to be a very long kind of climb to where you are now, what was it that made you want to do this in the first place? Cause that's a lot. Like, you really have to love it and really, 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 really want to get it, to go through kind of that climb that you did with the hours that you were putting in and the money that you were making. What was it, or when did you figure out that this is the career that you wanted to pursue?
Well, I think I always thought I could do it. That was a big part of it, was that I was always making some sort of progress. And I had a lot of people who were, very helpful in the way here, that were always sort of pushing me along, saying, stick with it, stick with it, stick with it. I mean, I used to train interns when I was a producer in Buffalo. And one of the things I would see a lot is people thought that there was a shortcut, that they thought, oh, now that I'm an intern, they'll just give me a job and then they'll just give me a sports radio show. And when that didn't happen, a lot of them just dropped out of the business and did something else, because that's not how it works. I mean, it takes a very long time. And all of my colleagues in the media room with the Vikings, they all get the same stuff here, there on Twitter. Why didn't you write this? You're an idiot for bringing up that, and all those sorts of things. And I kind of take that as all just part of the fun of us being passionate about sports. But all these people had to travel some sort of road, whether it was coming out of college and just interning and going to the next thing and to the next thing and the next thing, to be able to get here. And for every person that is covering the Vikings on a daily basis, there's 1,000 people that decided that they didn't want to go through that grind, or they didn't have the talent to do it and they dropped out. Now, look, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I can't do anything else. Like, the reason why is because, I mean, I worked at a grocery store before and I couldn't stand that. I couldn't be a lawyer. I couldn't be a doctor. I couldn't be an engineer. That's what my little brother does. I couldn't fix a car. I can barely, change the wheel if it falls off or whatever. Like, I don't have any other discernible skills in this life. So I figured I better stick with this, or I'm going to end up back working in my grocery store. So that was pretty much it. But, I don't by any means want to sound like, I'm a hero of some kind for sticking with this and doing it, but only to present how sort of funny it is that, anybody would bring that up. It's like, yeah, well, a lot of people think they can do it. And if you could, you would have.
Well, all right then. And you said no discernible skills. I feel like you're being a little harsh on yourself. I mean, when was the last time you laced up the skates? Have you been on the ice?
Oh, buddy. Oh, I can't play hockey at all. I mean, I've got skates and I have a stick and I've got a puck, and every so often I'll skate around and whip that thing at the empty cage, but I cannot get up and down the ice. That was the other thing, is that my 40 is slow. My shot is money in basketball, but the slowness is a problem. And I'm 6'2", but 6'2" is short in basketball. So, pro athletics just weren't really going to happen. But, you would be amazed though in this business, just how similar it is to sports, you know? It's competitive, which is one of the fun parts of it to me, you know, that we're all sort of working the same team, but we're all looking for different angles. And what we're trying to do is bring people the best information and the most unique angles and whatever that we can. And that to me is a lot of fun. I mean, so that's the thing, you know, with the Antonio Brown conversation, it's like, I thought it was a fun conversation to have because there is a good case for going after Antonio Brown and there's a good case for not going after Antonio Brown. And when you have that, you've got a good conversation. So, you know, I think that there are always going to be some people who get upset with you when you have debates and they're, you know, passionate and, you know, everybody is interested in the team. And I kind of accept that as we go along the way. And I think the vast majority of people like having those conversations and find it fun. And they go to wherever they work and they say, this idiot on Twitter was saying they should get Antonio Brown. And then his buddy says, maybe you're the idiot. And, you know, I just envision this sort of being a fun thing to do in the middle of February. But, you know, maybe not everyone saw it that way.
No, I actually appreciated the Antonio Brown conversation because it actually got me to go back and kind of look at the numbers that I was looking at for Kirk Cousins relative to a supporting cast and update things at the end of the season. Because when the season ended, I wanted nothing to do with Vikings stuff for a little while. So I just wasn't really doing any of like the digging into the numbers or all that stuff. And then after digging in, it just kind of made me sad all over again, because I think just in being on Twitter all the time, it kind of had conditioned me to believe that Kirk Cousins was in this terrible situation for a quarterback. And then when I actually went and looked at kind of the numbers that I was looking at, when you look at, you know, the quality of his receivers, you know, the pressure that he faced, how good his defense was, his running game and all of those things. And, you know, his situation was like the sixth most QB friendly based on the metrics that I was looking at. So the Antonio Brown thing, it hurt, because even if the Vikings had the best receiving core in the league, they'd only really bump up to like fourth best situation for Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. And if you left everything else equal and gave him like the best protection in the league, which we know is not going to happen next year, we're not going from where we were to the absolute best. They're still only going to be like top four or so situation because of how good the receivers already are. So the improvement's going to have to come from someplace else. And I really hope that Kubiak and co are miracle workers. I think we're
that in two parts. It's like they did have a lot of success with the two wide receivers, but it seemed like in this very specific type of situation, which just so happens to correlate to be really important for top quarterbacks, that was where it showed up the biggest, right? So like Thielen and Diggs, of course, were spectacular all season long and probably could have even been better if Cousins took some risks. But, you know, every time it was third and five or more, that was when teams knew exactly what to do. And especially in the second half of the season, and Cousins could not find a way to solve it. And the other thing is too, that I think about the personnel that's around him and where Kyle Rudolph fits in all of this. And with Keenum, he was willing to just throw it high and let Kyle Rudolph reach up with his big giant mitts and catch it. And it just didn't seem like Kirk Cousins was going to use him that way. He needed to be open to throw it. So it's like, okay, well, now you have to have that other option on third down and seven, because you're going to have a lot of those throughout a game. And that's where I think that you're right, that they had actually a pretty good supporting cast for him overall. And usually the tackles have a lot more to do with impacting the quarterback with pressure from the outside as opposed to inside. At least that's what the Pro Football Focus numbers have found, that the outside pressure causes more problems. The tackles were okay. And so I think that his supporting cast actually was pretty decent, especially when you look around the league. I mean, my gosh, imagine being Josh Rosen last year and having, you know, Colby Gossett start when he couldn't even get on the field for the Vikings. But you know, as compared to the rest of it, he did have a good supporting cast. It's just that one situation that keeps drives going and gets points on the board when you're at the 50-yard line after two completions or something and you need that third and six. It just seems so often it wouldn't happen. And that's where, whether it's Antonio Brown or not, I think that if you're talking about a number two tight end, or possibly number one if they don't decide to stick with Rudolph, or a number three wide receiver, I mean, I think these things are absolutely vital for this quarterback, where, you know, maybe other quarterbacks it wouldn't have to be, but with him it was. And then, you know, only running play action 19% of the time. is a crime, and John DeFilippo should be in jail for that. Not really.
And so if it's you, because I know that you're soon going to be heading to football Mecca to go and time. Do you have your watch ready to do some hand times to make sure that the 40s are where they're supposed to be and all those things? What kind of, like, if you're the Vikings now, we look at this offseason. Obviously, Kirk Cousins is here. He's the quarterback. He's what we got. And obviously, all the Vikings fans, I think many would be happy if we took, an offensive lineman with the first three picks in the draft. We know that's not going to happen. But if it's you, Matt Collar, going in to this offseason, how are you addressing it to get Cousins into the best situation that we can make with what we have at our disposal at this point?
It's such a fun question to talk about because there are more holes than there is money in draft picks. And so it's going to be really interesting to see which holes they decide are the ones that they must fix and which ones they fix sort of for the future and which ones they just have to kind of leave open. Like, if you're adding up on both sides of the ball, you have to fill three technique defensive tackle. You have to fill linebacker. And as long as Anthony Harris is a restricted free agent, we've sort of written him in already, but he is a restricted free agent. So you've got to fill the safety unless you're bringing Sandejo back, which they probably won't. So you've got at least three positions on the defensive side that they have to address, two guard positions that they have to address, a number three receiver, possibly a number two tight end, and they can't only rely on Mike Boone as their number two running back. So you've got all these things. So how are you going to distribute the assets across those things? Like, are you going to try to fix? I was thinking about this today, just at random, with Andy Levitre. There was some news with Andy Levitre that he thinks he's healthy. Like, that's probably a 1 year deal for like $5 million for that guy, right? Because he's going to be 33. Is that the way they go to try and fill the guard, or do they draft a tackle and hope that their tackle can play day one at left tackle? Or does Juwan Taylor drop to them and they put him at right tackle and move Brian O'Neill around? I mean, this thing has so many options, and I've already done a number of draft simulations. I'm sure you were wondering about that. And, a lot of them come out similar to last year, where if you try to wait until the second round to get that offensive lineman, you might end up in trouble. So there's a good case for them taking an interior defensive lineman to take a tight end. And so really, as we go into this draft, we have to look at everything except for probably cornerback, although it is still Mike Zimmer. But you almost have to look at every single position outside of quarterback and cornerback for who they could take in the first and second round. And then we'll have more clarity as we get to the free agency part of things. But, I think they have just an innumerable amount of options. And then when you start to add in the possibility of moving on from Everson Griffin or Kyle Rudolph, I mean, it even gets more vast, the number of possibilities, which makes for them being one of the most interesting teams in the NFL this offseason.
All right, Matt. Well, you've been incredibly gracious with your time. So just a couple more questions to go and let you get out of here, because I know that you do have to prepare for more football and football and football.
I am actually keeping one eye on the Wolves here. So you got a little basketball tape grind.
You really are truly a glutton for punishment, man. So last two questions. This first one, what article have you written since you've become, someone who covers the Vikings beat reporter, and now Vikings, radio personality? Is that the appropriate term?
That'll work. Yep. That'll
okay.
Work.
What take is it that you've put out there that has got you the biggest backlash so far?
Oh, that's interesting. There were a few, I would say, as far as takes go. Cordarrelle Patterson to running back was one that brought about a lot of hashtag engagement, I would say, because there were a number of people who were incredibly passionate about wanting Cordarrelle Patterson to be tried at running back, and then others who thought it was the most ridiculous thing in the entire world. And I guess when Bill Belichick did it, it became a lot less ridiculous. But the other one was Anthony Barr is a pure pass rusher, which eventually Anthony Barr started just saying he wants to rush the passer all the time. But a couple years ago, it wasn't quite clear whether he was going to bounce back to the 2015 or how there was some ways to cover up his weaknesses. And that one got a lot of interest as well. And then the one that I think people were most annoyed at is when I wrote that someone should offer sheet Adam Thielen. Because, you know, it's like, don't give anybody any ideas. But it turned out that no one offer sheeted him and definitely should have. But Antonio Brown probably is right in that range. I think that as far as on Twitter goes, I have more followers now than I did then, just from covering the team for longer, and people find your work and, you know, things like that. And I also think that that was one that really split people down the middle, which as far as radio goes, those are the best and most fun topics to talk about, is when you have half of the fan base says yes and half of the fan base says no. So those are probably some that I remember the most. And this is the funny thing about it, is I really tend to stay within what I know to be realistic. So like the Cordarrelle Patterson thing, for example, someone had told me that he wanted to play running back. And so I was like, okay, well, let's explore this a little. Let's look at some of his plays and his numbers when he's at running back and, you know, talk about this a little, because why not? And that's always been sort of my approach, is like, if it's within reason, then let's talk about it, because it's the NFL and they play 16 games and the rest of the time we speculate.
All right. And last question for you here. You mentioned a couple earlier, but in terms of kind of learning about the game and you know, growing and understanding more about football as time goes along, because as you just said, most of the time we're not actually watching the game, we're just talking about it and thinking about what the next season is going to look like or what the next thing is going to look like. What are some books that you'd recommend to someone who's looking to learn more about football, or who are some people they should follow on Twitter to get smarter about football?
Oh man, first of all, the Climbing the Pocket folks, anyone involved with the Climbing the Pocket, always good content. The book I'm reading right now is really good, The Quarterback Whisperer by Bruce Arians. I mentioned that earlier, but he has so many great stories about working with Peyton Manning, working with Andrew Luck, working with Ben Roethlisberger, the best quarterbacks, you know, some of the best quarterbacks ever. And he's also just got a great background story. And another one about quarterbacks that I really loved, and I used this quite a bit in an article about Case Keenum, was The Making of Modern Quarterbacks by Bruce Feldman. That is a terrific book. Takes you behind the scenes into like quarterback tryout camps and things like that with Trent Dilfer. And Dilfer just has a ton of really, really interesting things to say about that. And you know, one that I'm trying to get into that isn't about football, but you can always learn stuff like about sports and then apply it, is Beta Ball. You ever heard of that? About how the Golden State Warriors were built. I just bought that and I'm really excited about it. So, you know, and then there's other things like my friend Bobby Peters writes these books analyzing offenses, and it's like really in-depth X's and O's stuff. But he wrote about the Eagles' third downs last year. And then this year he studied all of the Chicago Bears' plays on offense and then basically charted them out and explained how they worked. And if you really want to get into the deep nitty gritty of how this stuff works, I basically was cross-referencing his work all the time last year with John DeFilippo, looking back and like, okay, is this a Philadelphia Eagles play? And how does this work? And how does the read work? And stuff like that is like, if you're super serious about it, lots of fun. But, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that's great that I've discovered about Vikings Twitter, is people seem to have a real like thirst for learning more about the game. And that fits right in with me. And so it's sort of fun to learn about this stuff together.
Awesome. Well, Matt, as always, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a great conversation. Got to go over quite a few topics. Safe travels on your way to Indianapolis. And if you you find any good rumors, make sure that you you let us know about them.
All I need is one Antonio Brown rumor. That's all I need.
There you go.
Just give me that one.
But are we still allowed to call him Antonio Brown, or is it like Mr. Big Chest now?
You know, that might have hurt the possibility of the Vikings getting him, being wanting to be called Mr. Big Chest, but
I like to think about it as just is making the price go down.
I mean, there's got to be a price where every Viking fan would say, all right, fine. Like, I mean, if it's a third round pick, who would say no? I mean, if the locker room's bad, like, what's the worst thing that happens? You go 8-7-1 again, or like, I mean, Anyway, we don't have to get into it, but I just think that there's got to be some price where almost everyone would agree. Like, can I give you a free Antonio Brown? Like, okay, fine.
I don't know. So sometimes I wonder if you give us too much credit, because right now on Climbing the Pocket, we have a poll that is running. We have another 13 hours left in the poll. So if you haven't voted on that, you know, you should vote on that. But of what will be most impactful in 2019, improved pass protection, more pass game weapons, a better offensive coordinator, or improved run blocking, currently pass pro is number one at 46%, followed by improved run blocking at 29%, which makes me sad.
Yeah, that should
followed be by a better OC at 23%, more passing game weapons coming in at 3%.
3%. Well, that's 3%. Interesting. I mean, that is really interesting because, you know, I went back and did an article comparing the 2016 Washington Football Club to the Vikings weapons and to the supporting cast for Cousins. It wasn't close. Like, this was before the season. This wasn't even before it happened. Like, they had so many places that he could go with the football. I mean, guys who were dynamic players like Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis and, you know, Jamison Crowder, guys who could play multiple positions and are dangerous. And so there's at least five or six places he could go. Chris Thompson, one of the best receiving backs out of the backfield. I mean, they did have better pass protection than the Vikings did, and it wasn't close in that season. But those weapons, I mean, really, the answer to your poll is like three out of the four things, right? I mean, it's if they don't run block quite as well, I think they could still probably find some ways to run the football as long as they, you know, get ahead in some games this year. But you know, that's the thing about having Kirk Cousins as your quarterback is you need all of those things to work, and it becomes a very difficult formula when you have that type of cap hit, you know. And so that's, I'll tell you, man, if they find ways to fix all those things this offseason, well, I think that the offensive coordinator issue is already fixed. So there you can add some points on right there. But, you know, if they get more weapons around him and are able to fix the offensive line, then we're looking at front office of the year again, because they are in a very tight situation. So that's what makes it interesting, man. It's a good poll.
Boom. Well, all right. Matthew, as always, thank you. And you have a good one, man.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Hey, man, talk to you soon. Well, there it is, our interview with Matthew Coller. Covered a lot of things there, a lot of stuff for us to digest as fans. And like I said before, if you like it, let me know. If you don't, let me know. Probably be looking at adding a few more interviews and conversations of this sort over the course of the off season. So if you have any feedback, shoot it my way. Again, Jason Brown, you can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Suggesting that they get a good football player was going to be controversial, but it is.
Yeah, it ended up being very controversial.
Very controversial. Sorry, I don't mind that.